are the voyagers of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
six, five, four, three, two, one, zero, blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Buddy, you listening to old Shazoo's Mad Science? I'm honored to have my buddy Cultus back in the lab. He's working around with his Atmo motor and stuff like that.
Whee!
And, we got a big crew on the deal there. Who all we got in here? We got Ryan from Abrams Lab, and we got Dieden and Mitko and Dublin. You guys there?
Yeah.
Say hi to everybody, for Pete's sake.
Hi, everybody.
Everybody jumping a mic at once, you might chip a tooth.
Oh!
So what you guys got going on in your labs this week? Anything good?
Oh, man.
I seen the video that Ryan put up there for how to put together a Slayer exciter.
Yeah, that's a cool little video.
You want to talk about that, Ryan?
Yeah, I guess.
Awesome.
Evening last night, so I'm kind of still.
We're gonna wait for you to catch up then. Whenever your brain.
Still distilling, hey.
Man.
Still distilling.
You know.
Yeah. I think I still have some juice in me.
You're gonna
not that kind of juice, actually. More the electrical kind. So
you're gonna pickle that thing if you ain't careful.
I know. I had the video. I got on there this morning. And it's cool what I'm doing, but then I'm listening to myself talk, and I'm like, too many beers last night, obviously. So this one will have music on it too, and me just talking. With music, man, you won't even be able to hear me, but you'll see what's going on.
Well, don't drink the beer with all the hops in them Bud Light will give you a headache.
Oh, it's not so much that. It's more, I was literally the top load last night.
Oh,
so it's a different kind of juice. I'm still really trying to comprehend what went on and what I did last night. So,
I'm pretty sure that if you're in my lab, you don't want to touch much.
No. It's a frequencies thing,
Yeah. Well, that's what me and Coltis was talking about this morning, because we're actually going to try to do a breakout video, because we see all the videos out there with people breaking out, but the research that I'm into as far as Tesla technology doesn't have anything to do with breakout. I don't want mine breaking out, because I'm actually into the frequency research itself, and that's why I've gotten depth with plasma. And we were talking about the sun, and the power of the sun. The highest frequency in our solar system is the sun. I mean, it has enough power to transmit not only light but heat. All the way, how far away is the sun? Like 1 million miles or something like that?
96 million miles.
Yeah, 96 million miles it can transmit a frequency from the sun all the way to the earth and give you a sunburn.
Let me see you do that with a Slayer exciter and a fluorescent tube.
And so imagine, everybody knows what a variac is, or a potentiometer, or a variable capacitor, right?
Oh, yeah.
Imagine if you had a huge one set up to where you could actually adjust the plasma reaction that's going on at the sun. You could sit there and you could tune it up and down like a light dimmer, Imagine what you could do with that.
Scare a lot of people.
Yeah. Hey, look, somebody keeps turning the sun off and on, and it's getting cold over here. Well, that's not necessarily what I want to do. I'd like to keep the sun on, because me personally, I'm kind of cold-blooded. I wear layers of clothes because I get cold. I sleep with a blanket in July, man. And everybody thinks I'm nuts, but, I don't want to freeze. I get hypothermic.
It was in the 30s last night here in North Carolina.
It's a bit nippy here. I think, what's the temperature, around 40 or 50?
Yeah, at the moment.
Yeah.
Slowly climbing.
It's that doggone global warming / climate change / climate disruption that's going on.
/ ice age.
Yeah, / ice age. I forgot. It started with the ice age, went to global warming, then it went to climate change, and then it went to climate disruption.
Climate extreme.
Yeah, okay, there we go. There's another one in there. I wonder what they're going to name it next.
Like that.
Yeah. That's well done, Darden. I'm proud of you.
Well, it's just, if you're gonna make a scientific theory, at least try to keep your words in there right, something, instead of changing it every year. Whenever your theory doesn't match, you change the word to match the theory, kind of thing. Drives me nuts. Gives me a headache. But anyway, back to the old frequency deal right there, because my belief is that plasma is the key to being able to take such a wide range of frequencies. You know that in your stereos, you have a dial that you can turn to adjust for every frequency between a certain range, for FM or AM, whichever band you're listening to at any given time. But those radio stations are still there, And they're all there together, but you can't hear them unless you're turned into that specific frequency. And so to make a system by which you can go all the way down from the lowest frequency all the way up to the highest frequency using plasma and an adjustable spark gap, you can literally watch as you turn that plasma up and down. You see where I'm coming from?
Yep.
Anybody? Man, you talk about radio silence. It's like I heard crickets chirping in the background. Anyway.
What is wrong with everyone this morning?
They're all hungover or tired or something.
I'm sleeping.
Party up in the house. Was you snoozing? I thought I heard some snoring going on.
I agree with you. The plasma... Plasma is a great way to visualize the energies that are coming in, you know.
Yeah, but
to whatever frequency it is, you can actually see it.
But I want to be able to do more than visualize. I want to be able to take that energy off that plasma reactor and use a Tesla coil for an extreme antenna of epic proportions, and be able to turn that thing up and down like you wouldn't believe.
Oh yeah. So how do you go about doing it? In what way would you harness the energy of plasma?
Well, first...
Isn't the glass going to react with the plasma, and the glass cause a frequency, too, and put out a... Like, the form and size of the glass would be...
Well, I've literally exploded glass. You actually build up pressure inside them tubes, whether you realize it or not. And that's why whenever I design the newest plasma reactor, it's going to have a really thick-walled glass.
Yeah.
But I also have an emergency shutoff system for it in case it gets to that point. So
called duck and cover.
Yeah, yeah. Like dive, duck, dodge, dive, tuck and roll.
Well, we actually after the last episode of Shaziz with plasma, and most of you would have heard the story about how he. How he burnt through the wall of a vacuum tube and lit up everything in here for, what, three whole minutes?
Three solid minutes. This entire lab was energized.
What I proposed was that next time we try that we have some sort of a thin membrane that it can break through and head itself into an old compressor's air tank, which is grounded out. And that way we can see the reaction. We know that the pressure was there. We know the energy was there. But we don't have, you know, things in the lab lighting up for three whole minutes and trying to burn themselves down.
Yeah, if you could have saw it, it was pretty cool. I know you can to some extent you can see the power of the energy. Have you ever at night you shut your lights off and you still see your doggone TV monitor glowing?
For the light bulbs?
Yeah.
Residual,
Well, that's how much...
The gases.
Yeah, that's how much residual energy was left in the air that was enough to excite the gases in every bulb, in every monitor that I had in this lab.
Well, it's interesting, like, what I've been playing around with is that the dielectric is really important. It actually, like the magnetic, it creates the magnetic field. It like polarizes it, you know. So in a Tesla coil, the dielectric is the actual air itself. You know, it's like a tuning fork trying to resonate with the earth, and that's why you have like spark gaps and stuff like that to find that frequency and all that kind of stuff. But it's also why Shaziz was talking about the breakout and stuff. You get different breakout, different things depending on the temperature of the air around the top of the top load.
Yeah.
I've noticed when it's cold, you know, I'll get the little, you know, Tesla tornado, the little thing, it'll want to spin up on itself.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it's hot, and when it's hot, it wants to jump farther. When it was raining yesterday, it seemed to want to jump a little farther. You know, it has a lot to do with
heat in the air. Air that's hot is more conductive. That's why sometimes you can have a lightning strike in the same place more than once, because it's pre-ionized and it's also hot, which allows it to travel further. But the whole idea of what Shaziz was talking about before, and him and I have discussed this at length many times, is that those streamers I just wasted energy. That energy is just zapping off out into space and doing absolutely nothing. The top load is a plate of the capacitor. Your capacitor's construction is the top load being one plate, the air being a dielectric, and the earth being the other plate. Just the same as just the same as if you had any capacitor. If your plates are breaking out, it's not working as a capacitor. Or a very inefficient capacitor.
Well, it's really cool, and you can do things frequency wise with the breakout, but what I want to do is be able to control those frequencies just like tuning a radio tuner.
So if we get a system that we can, I'm thinking actually insulating, like putting a dielectric around the top load, just a very thin one, like using something like
insulating spray.
Yeah.
Like corona dope, that kind of stuff. Just to hold back that last little bit of energy, and then making an exact replica coil, and most of us here have discussed this at least once, making an exact replica coil with the same top load and everything else, and tuning that in as a receiver.
Yeah.
Because you've got your capacitor, it's already there, it's a capacitor with a coil in it, and the energy is bouncing in that coil. If you can tune into that coil on another coil, you will then charge up your top load on that other coil, and not have an energy loss. And that's what I think Tesla was doing.
Well, speaking about the bouncing around portion of it, I believe that when that tube exploded, because if you've seen any of my videos, you notice that there's multiple coils on that bench. And so that energy, when it was released, was like a pinball machine hitting all these coils and, you know, amplifying as it went. And that's how it was able to maintain for the length of time that it did. You see where I'm coming from, guys?
Yeah, and for the plasma chamber, if you can find, I know it's expensive, but if you can find, they call it quartz glass.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be it. That would be spectacular, because quartz has some really good significance towards what I'm doing as well.
Yeah, as far as resonating off the chamber walls itself and stuff like that.
Yeah, and that, and I know that glass, you know, it's a really good insulator, but it does have its weaknesses as far as heat goes, and inside that plasma, because, believe it or not, there's a lot of heat going on in there.
Yeah, and glass has imperfection in the crystal structure.
Yeah, go feel one of the get an old tube type TV or something like that and heat it up, and because if you notice back in the day, you used to have to wait for your television to warm up, because you know, it's got to get everything going, you know. But after it warmed up, you go touch one of those tubes, it's as hot as a light bulb. You know, there's a lot of heat going on in that plasma reaction. So you're getting a two-for-one kind of thing. See, the first plasma reactor ever created was the mercury arc rectifier. And that thing was an amazing piece of technology back then. I don't believe they knew fully what they had their hands on. And I would love to get one of the mercury arc rectifiers. I've seen a few people out there, like Photo Induction, he's got one. And, man, the things I would do with that... Oh man, that'd be a miracle. But the only thing I didn't like about the old mercury arc rectifiers was the fact that it was using mercury inside there. Because if I got an explosion such as I did with the argon filled one, that one would be potentially really serious if I exploded that one in my lab, you know.
Yeah,
I would be mentally ill for life. You know. But either way, you know,
you get a containment field.
Yeah.
Some type of containment apparatus.
If I had one, yeah, like you just said, I would put it literally in like a sealed fish tank style, you know, with a lid, and everything's all vacuumed out so that if it did explode, that it would contain all that that mercury, because I don't want microscopic mercury gas floating around the lab. That's not good. So kind of like that old Mad Hatter deal. You know, they used to use mercury when they were making hats back in the old days, and that's how that whole Mad Hatter thing came about, because they got mercury poisoning and they started losing their mind towards the end of their life there.
Yeah.
I don't want to get there. I like my mind.
So do you have one wire in, essentially, and then it goes to ground through your plasma chamber?
Yeah, there's your like I use a 20 kilovolt oil burner igniter, and I'm only using one leg off the oil burner igniter to energize the gas. See, that's all you got to do. You don't have to have a return path back to the igniter, which actually it uses less energy because of that, you know. And that oil burner igniter, I've been running for at least a couple years, and I ain't had it burn up or anything to this point. And so all you got to do is be able to get that gas energized to get it to the plasma state. Once you're to the plasma state, just like the old mercury arc rectifier, man, you can cram so many electrons inside that little tiny space, it's just mind-boggling. And the pressure that you get out of the other end, the DC voltage, it was enough to run them old Edison elevator motors, the old DC elevator motors. That's why they built it initially, was because when they shifted over from Edison's DC to Tesla's AC, which Westinghouse stole the credit for, but when they shifted over from AC to DC, they still already had this infrastructure in place where they needed some sort of, essentially a diode to change the high voltage AC and the high voltage DC to be able to still run these old electric elevator motors. And that's why they built it, to make basically a diode, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know...
How many of these rectifiers are left?
Oh, I have no idea,
not,
man.
Not
They're
a
like
lot
rare.
Of them. Not a lot of them. But we were discussing just before the show that you actually have a mercury arc rectifier in most of your houses. It's not exactly a mercury arc rectifier, but it does contain mercury. It does contain a couple other gases. Hey?
It's a mercury switch.
No.
Fluorescent tubes.
Fluorescent tubes. Yeah, fluorescent tube will turn AC into DC.
But see, the only problem with that, if you're going on a lower voltage, that wouldn't bother me a bit. The only problem with that is, once again, the mercury, because those fluorescent bulbs are thin wall. Now, if you was to encase it in epoxy resin so that you wouldn't have to worry about it being breached, then I would be more apt to try to use that. But, you know, out of safety concerns, yeah, well, you do it in your lab. And when Coltus calls me up and he's all drooling and everything, oh, how's it going? You know, and I'm like, what happened? He had an explosion in his lab with a mercury bulb. Yeah,
I did. Look what I did.
Yeah, you did it. Oh my God, you really did it. Oh, no, seriously though, safety's got to be your first concern on that whole deal. If you, like I said, if you could encase it in epoxy resin, you wouldn't have to worry about it breaching, and that would
never
be...
Never heard of such a thing.
What, breaking?
No, encasing a fluorescent in epoxy resin.
Oh, yeah, man. Oh,
no. You know...
No one's thought of that.
Yeah, I won't go any further. I won't go
Shut
any
up,
further with that one. But there are benefits, but anyway.
Really? Yeah. Okay, guys. Seriously. They're stashed everywhere, anyway.
You have to seed these thoughts in case one of us disappears. Yeah. But that is only half the idea. So shut
there's
up.
One, yeah, there's one hidden in my grandmother's house. So
anyway. Nice one, H. Nice one.
When your grandmother sees it, she's going to think it's alien technology. And
it is.
Men in black.
It is.
She saw it, and it actually blends into all the antiques and stuff.
Nice.
And it disappears.
Cool. Well, anyway, like I said, though, once you get control of that plasma where you can actually tune it up and down just like a variac, a variable capacitor or a potentiometer, and you can sit there and you can adjust that, you can play any frequency you want through your coils. You know, and your coil, your Tesla coil, is the best antenna you're ever going to get. You know, if you don't believe me, try hooking it up to one of your CB radios and see how many neighbors you piss off. Yeah, because you're going to be walking all over their TV, you know. They don't like that stuff.
Tim in the military will pay you a visit.
Hey, I'll tell you something. Lindsay's coming to the driveway before with the radio on. You ever pull into a gas station that has the metal canopy and you've got the radio playing and then all of a sudden the radio goes off? Or you pull into the place at the bank and it's got the radio just gets shut off? You know, she's pulled into... She's pulled into the driveway and the radio shuts off.
Yep.
So, because I don't have any kind of cable or any, you know, it doesn't really affect. I was telling everybody yesterday, you know, I was playing around with the Slayer circuit, doing some different things, and I had the tablet near it, and that high frequency does a number on tablets and mouse pads, and the tablet started writing and flipping pages by itself, you know. And
oh yeah,
I can sit it right next to the big one, and you know, 3 foot arcs coming out, and it doesn't do anything.
Well, I had to record my Slayer Exciter from like 20 feet away because I'd get any closer and it would turn my camera's recording function on, off, on, off, on, off, and I'd have like 25,000 1 second clips.
Well, go watch my video Death Ray. Alright, and everybody thought that I jacked with that, but it didn't. You know, it
jacked with the camera.
It held a charge because it has a capacitor layer built inside the coils. And so whenever I had that thing energized, it was jacking with my camera. And so you hear me in there, it sounds like I'm talking in slow motion. That's because it was still energized and jacking with my camera before I even turned the thing back on. So there's a lot of potential in there, man.
I've had the same effect with my coil when I turn it way up, you know, it's, as far as the frequency goes, and yeah, I can't get too close to it with the video. It does the same thing.
Yeah, now that high frequency doesn't care. Did any of you guys ever see the video I did showing what it did to the electrical conduit on the Slayer with the Slayer Exciter? It just decided to make its own path, and it like literally ran like what could only be described as the inverted blackish look of a lightning strike, and just ran itself down the conduit. It didn't care.
Well, no,
it does some weird stuff. It'll turn on my flat screen TVs.
Yeah.
It'll turn on the Xbox and open it up, and then close it, and then turn it back on. And, I mean it. And it all used to be when what I would do is I'd have it to a, you know, a DC power supply, and I'd be able to turn it up and down, or I change the amp, just, you know, current and voltage. And man, when you start turning those knobs and dialing and turning it up and down, it does. So, like I said,
well,
so
contemplate on this for a second, and I know every single one of you has witnessed this to some extent because you've all been playing around with Tesla coils and Slayer exciters and such. When you transmit that energy wirelessly through the air and you're lighting that light bulb up on the other side, what you're holding in your hand is literally a rectifier to change the voltage into DC voltage. And so you have a wireless charging system right there in your hand. You have a mercury arc rectifier essentially right there in your hand. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So imagine if you had the frequency adjusted to the, you had enough power going into your transmitter coil that you could, instead of only going a few feet out, you would literally be going miles all the way around the earth, you know. You would light up every single fluorescent bulb in the entire world and make a whole lot of people mad because they couldn't sleep because the light wouldn't go off.
Yeah, that's... I would like to have that problem.
Yeah.
But here's the cool thing about that, though. If that energy is lighting up that light bulb, you can tap into that energy and charge your batteries with it. You've already got the diodes right there. The rectifier is already there. You got DC current coming out right there.
Yeah, the only issue is the energy loss because there is a very, very minute amount of heat and there's a lot of light.
Yeah, but you didn't call me up and say, look, brother, you know, you're going to have to turn that up a hair because I'm trying to run my toaster.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be better with LEDs?
With what? LEDs? Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
I mean, they light up better and they still rectify the current.
Yeah, okay. They're not bad, but with depending in the depending on the circumstances, depending on what you're trying to use them for. All right, you have to consider that because they're very, very small amount of energy, whereas the fluorescent tube can handle a lot of energy.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. If you're using the fluorescent tubes to energize your LEDs, you don't get no stress. Like this little coil up here that I got that is just nothing more than a copper wire around a piece of PVC tube, and I can light that LED up when the signal's through there. Well, one of the biggest money drains that you got in your house is just your lighting alone, believe it or not. You know, you go to Energy Saver bulbs, you'll save some money because it's running off of fluorescence and doesn't require as much energy, but the LEDs are a lot more efficient and a lot easier to light up. So if you could take your entire house off the grid, just the lights, don't worry about the appliances, leave those on the grid because you're not going to be using those 24/7. If you take just the lighting off there, you'll watch your light bill drop, and you can energize your entire house off of one 12-volt oil burner igniter and one 12-volt car battery that you have connected to an old crappy solar panel out in the yard. So you keep that thing charged up all the time, and then at night, instead of using your regular lightings, which are the incandescent bulbs that drain a lot of energy, because you know you basically it's a dead short when you talk about an incandescent bulb. The only reason why tungsten element doesn't burn up is because it's in a vacuum, and so even after a while, it'll degrade that tungsten to the point where it finally does burn out. But if you have an LED system that is ignited by, you know, basically an argon gas or fluorescent bulb system, then all you're doing is using just a little bit of energy to light up your entire house. You can put these doggone fluorescent bulbs for miles in line with each other, run one wire from legs off your oil burner igniter all the way through as many bulbs as you can put in line, and then plug it into the dirt on the other side and light every single one of those things up.
Yep.
All you're doing is energizing that gas. So that's why I'm fascinated with the plasma. And, you know, the potential of that is, you know, you've got wireless charging systems everywhere. If you've got a fluorescent bulb in your house, you can charge a battery up.
Shoot. It's like we were talking yesterday. She says the power lines, you know, you can charge up batteries with the power lines. I bet I could just run a wire right under a power line and run a Slayer off of it.
Yeah, remember I told you about the little AC testers?
You
can literally go get one. These are like anywhere from $7 to $11, depending on how high-tech you want. I just got the little cheapo $7 ones. And you can walk out in your yard and turn that thing on, and you can find out exactly, down to the exact measurement of how far that field actually comes off that power line.
Yep.
You know, the power company has a easement wherever the power line is, and so if you put anything within that easement, they'll try to get you for stealing power. However, if that doggone energy is going over that easement, if it's crossed the line just by a centimeter, it's on your own land, they can't get you for stealing it. You put your little antenna right up there in the dirt right across their line, they can't do nothing to you. You know, they might be able to try to complain and try to get something passed where saying, well, you can't use no wireless devices to borrow energy. Or in their words, they'll say stealing.
I live, they wouldn't even know what it was.
Or in my words, cleaning up electrical pollution.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And not to mention that, if you think about it, everybody talks about all these Gwen towers out there, that the frequencies are bothering them, you know. If you've done any Tesla technology, whatever, every one of us knows that magnetic fields will couple with each other. If you want to keep that energy from coming into your house before it ever even gets there, find out what megahertz range or kilohertz range it's on. Build you a system to couple with that field, and then drain that energy into a battery. Trickle charge that frequency into a battery and charge your batteries up with their frequency pollution.
Pretty much. I mean, Yeah, but and you're right. You're going to stop the radio signal.
Yeah, well, you'll stop it. If you're not using it, why do you need it? You know, if it's just, you know, like right now, we're being bombarded by frequencies. I got like 98.9 and 101 and 105 and 106, all these frequencies blasting through my brain right now because I don't have my radio on. I'm not tuned to any one of them. And so, you know, why not use that energy as it's coming through? Because every time you key up your cell phone or you key up a microphone for a CB radio or walkie-talkie, you are literally sending electricity through the air, which then in turn goes out and finds any antenna, because the wave doesn't just go in a straight line from antenna to antenna. It goes in a circular motion and spreads out. Depending on the power level in that walkie-talkie or CB radio will depend on how far that field actually expands. Kind of like whenever you're running around your Tesla coil, you know you can get maybe 4 or 5 feet away from it and be able to light that bulb up in a perfect circle all the way around it. You see what I'm saying?
Field matching.
Yeah. So if you want
field
to...
Field matching, that's what I'll... Yeah, it's resonant matching.
Yeah.
Like if you could resonate to the radio station, heck, the what they're broadcasting could turn on a Slayer Exciter.
Yeah.
You know that resonating with a radio station is actually a very well-known thing on how to do it. It's called tuning in your radio.
Yeah.
I know.
I'm just putting it out there.
You see what I'm saying?
It doesn't pull from the system, though.
That's right. Yeah, I was just putting it out there for the audience, yeah. More so, Abes. But yeah. Okay. I wasn't taken from you, bro.
But you can do this because I put a circuit together. There's a video out there of a little wireless energy circuit that I showed. That I made this little bitty circuit with a little coil wire, and you can actually get your cell phone close enough to it. It will literally light up the LED on there. So it's picking up energy off of that. And you can do the same thing with taking a coil wire and putting it next to any transformer, like the, you know, little power supplies that you have in your house or an electric motor, because there's waste field coming off of that electric motor.
Well, you know the potato clock for kids, you know, the little kit that you can buy and you get a potato clock. Thought about juicing up the potato clock a little more, kind of the idea of trying to run a Slayer circuit off the a potato, or maybe more than one.
Do you know what I would use? I would use...
Dirt.
Hey?
Dirt.
No, listen.
All right.
This is what I would do. Take your potato... and wire it up like a battery. Now, you can use the one potato...
Oh, he's talking about a clock.
Yeah, but hang on. He's talking about the potato clock, which is the lemon battery theory.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so take your galvanized nail and your copper. Take a dozen galvanized nails and a dozen lengths of copper. Shove them all in the same potato, just as long as they don't electrically connect inside the potato. Okay? Then wire them up in series... Or parallel, depending on where you're going to get the best effect, and use a jewel thief.
There you go.
And then connect the jewel thief to your Slayer Exciter.
Yeah, and if you run your Slayer Exciter and then a Tesla coil off of a potato, you're going to be famous.
This is true.
Let's do it today.
All right. I'll be looking out for the video.
Come on, man. We've been talking about this.
Well, get some doggone...
It's the capacitors. You know, it's the whole supercapacitor thing. You know, that's something I've been doing a lot of thinking on. I can't stop thinking about it. I watched a guy, he put graphene on some tape and then scotch tape and then put a layer down and another some more graphene, a layer, and he... He didn't get too intense with it, but that whole concept, I've seen guys brush it in, sand it into glass, and put layers of glass, and anyway, that's what me and Dyden have been talking about a little bit this week.
We're running off the dirt right now, and it's actually starting to go up. I'm already over a half a volt, and that's just running off the dirt alone, and it's charging a capacitor. Now, imagine a capacitor bank that is set up on a transistor that...
I can't help myself.
When it actually gets to a certain voltage, it won't discharge that capacitor until it actually gets...
Just jump from 0.47 to 0.56.
Yeah, well, you're distracting me. He's back there running the Van de Graaff.
I couldn't help myself, alright?
Anyway.
Nah, that's like me.
Alright, picture a circuit board that has a whole set of capacitors on there that are like dominoes. They're set up like dominoes. You got a transistor in between each one of them, and the transistor will dump into an even larger, when the transistor gets high enough to actually make it, turn on like a switch, it will dump that energy out of that capacitor into a larger capacitor.
Cascading.
There you go.
It's just like plasma, though. That's basically what you're doing with plasma.
Yeah. But I'm talking about for taking like a half a volt of electricity and building that up to actually some usable voltage. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you're saying. I've been playing with that a lot.
So you domino that all the way down, and you could literally run something, and it's going to be minor, of course, unless you actually build a larger version of what I've got going on. I've got a copper-coated ground rod in the dirt, and I've got a galvanized ground rod. And you'll get a little galvanic action between the two, and that's some voltage, and plus you'll get the chemistry from the dirt. And if it rains outside and gets that all stirred up even more, you'll get even more voltage out of the doggone thing. But either way, you take that minor bit of voltage, run it through the cascading circuit there, to where when each one of the transistors gets hot, gets ready to fire, it'll dump off into another capacitor and keep doing that, and it'll just keep going around in the circle. If you hook anything directly to, like even a piezoelectric buzzer, I've had that running completely off the dirt when the voltage was up to about 0.77 volts, and you can hear the buzzer buzzing all the way down until it drains that cap dry. So with that said, when you hook it directly to your capacitor, you can't really carry a load. But if you had the cascading capacitors, to where every time one of the deals got ready, it would dump that load into a bigger one, and so on down the line, they'd all keep filling that capacitor bank up, and you could keep that going in a circle. You could run a constant load off of it. You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah.
So even with the most minuscule amount of voltage, there's a way by which you can actually, make usable electricity out of it. So if you took that potato battery under the same concept and was able to make a circuit, even with small capacitors, you could get it to run that, and using the jewel thief that he was talking about earlier, same thing.
Yeah, I'm back, guys. I had to go get my potato battery and my stuff. It's in my lap right now. Anyway, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I don't know. I mean, if somebody could, if you literally sit, just have some wires you just shove into like a potato and charge your cell phone up, that's pretty cool. Or a lemon, or I run them off a Coca-Cola, salt water.
Well, believe it or not, they actually sold a kit via Radio Shack to turn a potato into a battery.
Jeez,
yeah.
And I've got the deal right here. They call it the bleeding potato. But
well, Radio Shack, listen, they sell a kit like whatever that 101 science experiment thing or whatever. Terry was telling me, I could build 7 different types of Tesla coils out of that kit. So
you want to read this out?
Where am I reading? What's the interesting bit?
This is turning a lemon into a battery and a potato.
Lemon power. Get 2 juicy lemons. You'll need to roll these firmly on the table to make it's soft and mushy inside.
To get all the juice out of the little pods inside the lemon.
The lemon. Try not to break the skin. Hook one end of each alligator clip to a piece of zinc. The zinc pieces are grey and lumpy. This is obviously all included in the kit.
Yeah.
Hook the other end of one of your alligator clips to a piece of copper wire. The other copper wire will be all by itself. Use the diagram guide to poke a piece of zinc wire copper into each lemon. You might have to cut a small hole in the lemon peel so the zinc can touch some lemon juice. If everything is set up correctly, you'll get a small tingle when you touch your tongue to the free end of the alligator clip and the copper wire. You've created your own battery. To compare this sensation, quickly touch your tongue to the terminals of a 9-volt battery. Tingle! But as I pointed out, you can actually get away with using one lemon or one potato just by putting multiple strands of copper and zinc or copper and galvanized nail in the fruit there. So,
but either way, man, you're talking about taking a doggone lemon or a potato and turning. What do we go
down on there?
Go up.
Sorry, we got distracted with some mad science going on.
What happened there?
I don't know, but
the meter. Okay, so this has this earth battery connected into one of those big blue capacitors like you sent me, Abe's. And
this is a 6600 microfarad capacitor.
Okay, it was sitting at roughly 5.6 to 0.56, 0.58 volts. So about half a volt. All of a sudden, I just turned around and the meter had maxed out. And it's sitting on a 20 volt scale.
Shot up into the high voltage range.
But then when we fiddled around with the meter, it reset itself. So I'm a little baffled. That kind of...
Maybe some kind of high frequency pulse.
Yeah, it might have had something to do with me mucking around with the Van de Graaff generator next door.
Yep.
Yeah, because you are.
Maybe you've charged yourself.
Hey. Mm.
You've charged yourself with the Van de Graaff generator.
Yeah, you're a walking capacitor, and you blew it up, man.
Well, I am wearing my safety boots.
So you store charge a little better.
Sure. There is a dielectric between me and the earth. I am Capacitor Man!
Oh, wow.
Wow. Okay, I'm disturbed now.
Superhero name could be like Coulomb Force.
I'm going to touch my ear, man.
Capacitor Boy and Coulomb Man!
Anyway, I've got a couple little nifty gizmos that actually have microplasma reactors inside of them, and they're running off of 9 volts. So my ultimate goal is to get a system that will. All I need is 12 volts. That's it. I don't need anything higher than that. 12 volts, and I'll amplify that to such an extreme that it'll boggle the mind. So
12 volts. At how much joule? How much energy? How big of a
Well, if you can calculate up what you get out of a 9-volt battery, that's all I need.
Depends on how good the battery is, I guess.
Well, take a brand new, fresh out of the box battery, and let me
Dollar
see.
Dollar store or
it one of them it doesn't.
Fancy name brand.
It does matter because they'll hold different amounts of amp hour.
Yeah. This one here is like 150 milliamp hours on it. That'll be enough.
Well, you could make an array like we were talking about, like, you know, it's the same with the lemon battery or the potato battery. If you stick them all into the same one, it's basically like sticking ground rods into the earth. They're gonna couple with each other. You're not going to be able to pull too much more out of it, although you might increase the actual amount of energy that's available, like in amps or joules or whatever you want to call it. But as far as voltage, you're not going to bring the voltage up unless you somehow insulate in between, create a dielectric in between.
Well, once again, we go back to that circuit board that I was talking about by taking the cascading capacitors. You know, each one of these would be a separate circuit of its own. When the transistor got high enough to actually flip the switch, it would dump that capacitor bank into a larger one. You see what I'm saying there?
Mm-hmm.
So instead of only having, you know, 0.5, it's at 0.58 right now, and that's just running strictly out of the dirt. Nothing else added to it, just right out of the dirt. That's over a half a volt. Just out of the dirt alone. And so we can get a circuit to trigger. If we put the line, let's say, at 0.58, we get it to trigger at 0.58. So it'll have plenty of time to charge that capacitor while the other ones are dumping into the bank as well. And they'll just domino back around to the first one. Every time one of them gets charged, it will dump into that capacitor bank.
Yeah. You're saying to store that energy.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm not necessarily straight out of the ground, but, there's a certain frequency, like you were talking about earlier with the plasma, you're going to have to try to achieve in order to pull in a good, hefty amount of energy of, from the ocean of energy beneath your feet or whatever. Because if you build it's going to take a long time to build up a cap that will do.
Energizing the dirt's the easiest part. Watch that voltmeter there, Cultus.
Okay. Hang on. I'm watching it now. We're at 0.58 fluctuating to 0.59.
All right. Now I'm going to flip my coils on and watch it. Damn.
Okay. So he has got the opposite effect. But.
Hang on. Leave it running.
But it is showing that we're going from 0.59 roughly to 0.56.
It should have jumped a lot higher.
But are you introducing positive or negative electrons?
Yeah.
And what happens at the same time if I do this?
No, I got a break in my ground somewhere. Hold on, I know what's going on.
He broke it! Hang on, we're trying again. What have we changed? Or what are we changing? Okay, we're adding a ground. I know what this lead is. We're adding a ground to the Tesla coil system.
You're freaking kidding me.
But, no, that's made it go down even further. Shaziz, you're not paying attention to your fact you are actually adding electrons. There's negative electrons.
Look, you see compared that LED to what right there? That tells when there's high voltage in the dirt.
Yep. But which way?
Yeah.
You guys understand what I'm saying, don't you?
Yeah.
I can hear it. I hear something going through there.
Sounds like Abe's house.
Anyway.
No, I hear that high pitch.
Energizing the dirt's easy. Here, I'll cheat. Watch this.
Now he has a ground rod in his hand. Where's it going?
Going down in the dirt.
Okay, cracking the concrete.
Cracking
down
the foundation. Alright. If this doesn't blow us offline, I hope it don't. Alright.
See, I hear it again.
And down even further, now we're at 0.52.
Alright, well,
you're adding negative electrons, Shaziz. You're still doing what you're saying you're doing, but it's having the opposite effect on the meter that you were expecting.
Yeah.
But the same thing is happening, otherwise the meter wouldn't change.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I'm smart. But I'm helping.
Anyway, energizing the dirt's the easy part. Of course.
I got the clock running off of half a cup of Coca-Cola.
Hey, nice work.
Right on.
I'm going to take a picture and post it anyway. And then I'm going to take the clock or cut the wires off the clock.
Anyway, we're going to throw on a quick music break and get some coffee and that kind of stuff.
Because I need it.
Thomas isn't here today, but I'll play his tune for him. Just glue some gears on it. I'll play his other couple too. Anyway, stay tuned, everybody.
As I read the Gazette to catch up on the news, some classified adverts I chanced to peruse when I saw a category called steampunk. I turned to it eagerly but left in a funk, for I quite enjoy the steampunk aesthetic, but what I beheld there was rather pathetic. These intrepid online auctioneers are just taking modern objects and stuck on some gears. It's simply not cricket, it shouldn't be done, but it's clear how their thoughts had run. Just glue some gears on it and call it steampunk. That's the trendy fashion nowadays.
Sarcoma painted chunk of some 1980s junk will fetch a pretty penny on eBay.
But it got even worse than that, I'm afraid, and as I went on, I became more dismayed, for they often didn't modify the things they wanted me to buy.
Habits to Betsy, a land of unregrets.
Steampunk is more than a mere mode of dress or decoration, so it brings me some distress to see a metal cicada described with that name. Or a teacup, a mood ring, a silver gilt frame. Gluing on gears at least takes effort. This is slow for the worst.
Just do some gears on it and call it steampunk. That's the trendy fashion nowadays. A copper-painted chunk of some 1980s junk will fetch a pretty penny on eBay.
Steampunk refers to a type of science fiction about alternate past, not future prediction. Often set in Victorian Britain, but the history of technology has been rewritten. So put a bit of thought into your designs. Use leather and brass, 19th century lines. Retrofuturistic is a good explanation. Blend antique reality with imagination. Recalling things steampunk to try to sound cool makes you look like a bloody fool.
Just glue some gears on it and call it steampunk. That's the trendy fashion nowadays. A copper-painted chunk of some 1980s junk will fetch a pretty penny on eBay.
Gauges and rivets, copper tubing and glass lend a steampunk creation a real touch of class. Gears are appropriate to introduce if they look like they have a legitimate use. Although Nixie tubes are undeniably splendid, they date from long after the age of steam ended. Pity really, I just love Nixie tubes. Anyway, I hope you've comprehended. So use the word steampunk correctly, old chap, and don't use it to refer to crap.
Just glue some gears on it and call it steampunk. That's the trendy fashion nowadays. A copper-painted chunk of some 1980s junk will fetch a pretty penny on eBay.
Hey, Dr. Steel, look at my new trumpet.
Well, that is a fine trumpet, soldier. Strong, healthy lungs. Soldier? Soldier!
Come on.
Soldier! Hello? Can you hear me? I'm getting another call. Listen, soldier, just keep playing the horn and I'll get back to you. Sorry about that. Quiet all day and then everyone calls at one time. Okay, let's see here. Tell me when you can hear me. How about now? Hello?
Hello, listen, listen to me, listen to me.
Listen to me, listen to me, my children.
Listen to me, listen to me, listen, children.
Gather around, hear the sound of my voice. There's girls and boys, will you make a choice? You can do for yourself, so you can buy all my toys. Just come on, so help, jump around, make some noise. I never lie.
I'm dancing, dancing, dancing.
Hello, everybody. We're back, and Coltus is playing around with the atmosphere motor there.
God help myself.
Yeah, you get him in the lab, and he's got to touch everything, man. He's plugging in things. And
that's what he's been needing.
Yeah, he's having fun. Anyway, on the break, we were kind of talking about the whole boy on the swing effect kind of deal there as far as energy, you know, and for those out there who don't understand what it is we're talking about, it's like if you get somebody going on a swing, and you usually have to start off with a certain amount of energy to get them going, but after a while, it starts to build up momentum on the back and forth, and it gets to the point where all you got to do is just barely reach out and touch to keep that momentum going. And so the same thing applies in energy. When you get a wave going, and then you push a wave right behind it, and then before it's all said and done, you keep on repeating that process over and over, the swinging effect back and forth builds that energy up. Well, I was talking about how I was going to explain, I used plasma to actually do the same thing. Coltus, can you see those two argon bulbs there?
Yeah,
well, these are fluorescent bulb starters, and you'll notice that when this thing is running, it'll start rocking back and forth. Hold on, let me put a little adjustment on there. I'm adjusting the spark gap, that annoying noise you hear. Gotta get it just right. Well, how those fluorescent, there we go.
Yeah.
You see how it's rocking back and forth?
Yeah, it's bouncing between the tools.
Yeah, well, how those fluorescent bulb starters actually work is that whenever that plasma gets hot in there, it has a little element in there that acts as a switch. And so when it gets hot, it'll shut the circuit off, and then whenever it cools down, it'll come back on. So in your fluorescent bulbs, you don't really notice it, but the starter in there is actually flipping on and off, and that's why you've just got like a little flicker going on in your fluorescent bulbs, because that starter, as that argon inside there is heating up into the plasma stage, it's flipping it back on and off. Can somebody add Thomas to the call?
Yeah, I'm trying to find his name here. I'm working on it.
He'll be coming up as offline, so look for him in your list of people who are offline.
Did you find him?
Yep, that helped. Thank you.
All right, no worries.
Anyway, so I use these two fluorescent bulb starters to get that swinging effect in the plasma reaction that I've got going on that is actually pulsing the coil. This specific coil that I'm talking about is the one that is a Tesla coil within a Tesla coil. It's got two primaries. It's got two secondaries and two top loads and two capacitor layers built into the actual coil itself. Did you get Thomas on there?
Yeah.
Are you there, buddy?
Yeah.
That's good to hear you. We just played some music for you.
No.
Anyway, how you doing?
Doing all right.
It sounded like you had a rough night.
Yeah, it's late working, so.
Yeah.
It's a lot out of you, but, you know.
Anyway, we were talking...
It's not worth putting into it. It's not worth doing, you know?
Exactly.
We were talking about the swinging effect between frequencies and stuff, and I just explained how I use the little argon gas-filled fluorescent bulb starters that you can get at any Walmart. They make really cool spark gaps that'll turn themselves on and off because of the heat inside that in that tube when that gas is energized to the plasma state. What's your thoughts on the matter?
You know, I don't have a whole lot of thought going in that direction because, as I mentioned before, I'm working on a solid-state based energy development that, you know, branches off into a whole bunch of different material sciences that will basically make it possible to do things at home that right now we're relying on large corrupt corporations that take advantage of, like, slave labor in other countries.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's, I think, that's pretty much a general consensus amongst all of us. That's the reason why I keep talking about not sticking all your eggs in one basket. You know, you have so many different things that goes on in nature that you can tap into that energy. And we don't need a whole lot to energize these systems. All we need to do is be able to tap into everything so we have a constant
amount. I'm doing it off the spot of a cop at the time.
7. Yeah.
Right. Well, and what I'm looking at basically will be a consistent... It's a frequential DC power source, but we're talking about, like, you know what three phase is versus one phase.
Yeah.
Imagine, like, something that's 5,000 phases.
Wow.
So, you know, it's going to look pretty smooth and even like a battery.
You can probably even borrow some off of a couple of those phases. You know, there are some folks out there that mess around with take the three-phase generators and make a combination generator / electric motor out of that. Have you ever seen any of them?
No. Oh, yeah. You're talking about...
They'll steal one phase off of it to...
It's like a Rotogen or something
yeah.
like that. I think they're calling it... UFI... Something like that.
Like bloody UFO politics is asymmetrical motor.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, I mean, even... This is something a lot of people don't understand, but even a battery is not truly a constant current. It's actually a phase inversion that you get a phase every time... You get a degradation in a material where two or more components come together to release an electron.
Yep. So it has a vibrational frequency, like all things.
And each battery type is going to have its own frequency.
Yep. Different chemical processes that are involved and stuff like that.
Well, I'll tell you this.
We're not talking about megahertz or, you know, terahertz or gigahertz. We're talking about, you know, way beyond even the petahertz range.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah, I want to eat a pair of
mine. I do, I'm sorry. I do.
Sorry.
That was terrible. Well, you know, with the...
We've come to expect plasma, nothing less.
The plasma, talking about the plasma and swing, the swing and all that kind of that principle or theory, it's almost as if the particles and waves both exist because, you know, the particle is like an implementation of some sort of force, right? And then the waves are the effect of that force to the environment.
Right.
So you come up with both a particle and wave, you know, just like Ryan always talks about, and he has a little video of where he's throwing rocks into the pond, and you can see the waves rippling and stuff.
Well, I was going to say, that's the thing is that a lot of people aren't getting either, is that you cannot have a wave without particles for it to exist on and be caused by.
Right, and you can't have particles just up the waves for them to transverse or to go through.
Like, right, just like you can't have heat without the material that basically we consider cold. You know, the actual movement and vibration is
just like you can't have.
You're just measuring that movement.
It's like you can't have consciousness without being, without form.
Right. Well, it looks like we don't have. I mean, you're going to get into a murky area where a lot of people with different views are going to start arguing about, you know, spirits and stuff like that. But
I'm going to dumb it down.
You can't have, you know, a brain. You can't have intelligence without a brain. Sentience without a brain.
That's according to our sensory perception. So
no, that's just it. Though we have nothing that we can prove otherwise, so we should stick to the facts that we know and leave whatever, if there is some other, you know, layer to our universe that these, you know, people who are into this religion or that religion, which, you know, again, I'm going back to the whole, I'm not going to say it doesn't exist because I don't have the technology to prove or disprove it, and unlike atheists who, you know, immediately assume something doesn't exist because they can't prove it exists without all the facts. I mean, you know, there was a time whenever nobody could prove the Earth was round.
Well, even science calls it magic. What holds the universe together? What holds the electron, the proton, and the neutron together and not slinging apart? It's magic.
Circle.
We don't know.
Residential
circles. Yep.
Well, that's just it, though. We don't know if it's flying apart or not. It could be flying apart, and our perception of time is just experiencing the effect before, you know, it's as it's being flung apart.
Or it could be collapsing in on itself.
Well, we know
the sizes
could be, it's all theoretical.
Right.
Size but
Danny,
but
we know this, that this every this gets down to though the nuts and bolts of what waste time is, you know, thinking about and concerning ourselves with things that we can't prove or disprove, and we really can't make any use of any of that. There, not one of those things we just mentioned will feed a starving child in Africa.
Well, not one of what?
Or give them drinking water. None of those things that we just talked about that, you know, have a more esoteric nature.
Well, it's an understanding of the universe. I mean, you never question why, then how would you discover what is?
Well, you're questioning things that are, you know, you're jumping like five steps ahead and leaving all the other steps behind. And what happens when you start leaping into the dark is you fall into a hole.
No, it's just it's theoretical. And just
take it one theoretical step at a time. Theoretical. Right, let's work on a theory that we can actually put together the tools.
Well, it's an exciting debate, but we do
and not argue with other people about it. You can believe whatever you want.
Yeah.
You can have whatever theories you want. Just don't get into knockdown, drag-out fights with other people either, because that's more waste of time and resources and pain and suffering that we really don't need. You know, we've got people that are, Muslim that hate Buddhists and Buddhists that hate Christians and, you know, Christians that hate Jews and, you know, all these people are believing things that basically there's no proof whatsoever that any one of them is right.
But we can prove.
It's creating a lot of harm and suffering to people over something that, you know, it doesn't matter. This point, scientifically, it's a story that makes it easier for you to go to sleep at night because you don't lay up at night worrying about what's going to happen to you when you die. Same thing for the atheist, too. The atheist is just basically, atheism is just a religion of non-existent.
Well, either way to solve the so-called energy crisis in the world, we can work with things that we can prove, such as a magnetic field, and you can test this for your own self. You can literally find out that a magnetic field will create a perfect sphere. You can take your field tester and you can run it around in all different 360 degree circle around in any direction, and you will pick that field up. So we can use that, knowing that any two fields will couple with each other. We can also use what we know from nature.
Hold on. What you just said though nullifies what you said initially. When you put two fields together, they're no longer, neither one of them is a sphere any longer.
It becomes one field.
No, they depending on how they're put together, they actually create what you normally would. When you look at like a bubble, and you put another bubble in it, the two stick together, and you've got these half spheres where a flat section exists in between them. That's closer to what we're basically dealing with magnetic fields, except that a magnetic field can penetrate the other magnetic field, whereas the bubble walls just kind of stick together and, you know, flow evenly.
Nature, with no intersection,
you know.
And I can prove this. Nature has.
And this is the thing: is that though that concept that I just mentioned is the foundation of understanding how to make a permanent magnet motor that actually works.
Yeah,
that's the one thing that all these people are missing, because they begin thinking that I'm sure you've seen plenty of these. Motor designs where they're trying to arrange a bunch of magnets pointed at each other, forcing each other along. And then you've got the people that, you know, try to do the attraction thing. Then you've got people that are trying to use diamagnetism because they think it's something completely different than it actually is, where, you know, it's just a constant repulsion, which is the same thing as having the magnets that are all pointing, you know, pole to pole, north to north, forcing each other away.
Well, bismuth doesn't block out a magnetic field. It basically redirects it. Goes right around it, and so you can literally steer the magnetic field to some extent. And that's
but you're still talking about bismuth is a perfect diamagnetic material in the sense that no matter what direction you would approach it at with a magnet, it will create a mirror of that magnetic field and point it back at it. It's weak, but it's there. If you take a the north end of a magnet and push it up against a block or a sheet of bismuth, it creates a north field facing back into that and creates a repulsion.
What about its electric conductivity and resistivity?
I don't remember what the measurements were on that.
But for a metal, it's one of the best dielectric insulators there is.
Is it?
It's pretty strong. It's up there with mica.
Wow, that's actually pretty impressive because mica is primarily a silica-based compound.
Yeah, and it's a metal. So think about that. It's a pretty interesting phenomenon.
Well, I have a walk, but here I'll have the fact that I can, while we're on the air here, I can bust out a tester and test it out. I've got one sitting right here.
You have some bismuth?
Yep.
Oh, hook me up. I'm just kidding. But, I think that Shaziz is right, though. You know, he brings up a good point as far as the magnetic field's coupling, though it may... Okay.
Sorry, I had to set my headset down to reach far enough get it. We get the multi-tester out here. Set it to ohms. Let's see if it's got some resistance.
You got a few crystals.
Anyway, while he's doing that right there, the magnetic fields, we already know will go in a perfect sphere, and regardless of what shape, and I'm going to still stick to my guns and say that the two will actually combine because nature has a tendency to balance itself out no matter what. You can pretty much see that whenever you use earth batteries and capacitors and so on and so forth. But either way, we can use that information to harness the energy that's around us by throwing nature off balance just long enough to capture the energy as it swings back. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. The asymmetrical system, known. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because this is a 1-pound block, I can't really give you what kind of resistance it has, but it was basically giving me like 1 ohm of resistance, so it's a pretty good conductor as far as materials go. It's a lot better than silicon. So, but it is a crystalline nature too, and the crystal nature of quartz is what basically creates the piezo effect, where when you flex it, it creates an electrical pulse.
We have
pulse to it, you can get it to flex.
We have very conflicting results here, Thomas. I'm holding the bit of bismuth that I gave Shaziz in my hand in a multimeter set to ohms, and no matter what range I set it on, I've got the probes like about an eighth.
And you're not getting anything off it. No conductivity
from an eighth. I have an eighth of an inch spacing between my probes on the bismuth, and no matter what range I set it to, I am not getting a reading.
Yeah, that's what I would expect.
How pure is the bismuth?
This is from a friend of mine, and it came from their mine. It's been purified 99.9%.
Yeah, this is the piece I have.
Here, test that. Make sure
it's that 99.999% pure too.
Now flip. Okay, we'll flip your samples and see if there's a certain directional pattern.
Yeah,
that's what I said. The stuff I have.
Try one probe on each side of the block.
Yeah, this is why we need virtual labs, so we all be looking at this right now. That'd be sweet.
Getting anything?
Nah.
Okay, it's just right here.
I'll grab a centimeter.
Hey, this makes for bad radio. We got
Dan
here.
Someone else talk for a minute.
this is virtual labs in the birthing stages. Here.
This is visual labs. You've got to visualize it in your own mind.
Use your imagination.
All right, well, he's got a better meter going on there. He's going to retest that deal. But either way, like I said, man, nature gives you energy in all different forms. You know, we're floating in a sea of energy, and so my belief is that if you can actually control the frequency level or be able to tune into any frequency, you can capture that energy. And so these are all things that we can prove that we know exist.
Okay, I'm getting a reading now. I'm getting about six ohms over an eighth of an inch.
Right. I'm kind of wondering if maybe there wasn't something wrong with the meter.
We just swapped out meters,
because it had such a low ohm rating, it might have been flipping it out. I know the fancier meters that try to adjust to the range automatically based on what it's getting.
But here's an interesting result for you. I've noticed that you get that blued metal sort of look on bismuth on it when you melt it. Like it goes a rainbowy sort of a colour. Now, if I connect one probe up to the silver side and one probe up to that blued side and set it to the diode testing function, I get a nice reading as well.
Yeah, it's like...
Yeah, I was going to say the blued effect is oxygen.
Metal oxide.
The silver side is just the metal.
Yeah. It's oxidization.
So you're pushing through the oxygen, so...
Basically, MOSFETs work in the same principle.
Right.
Well,
yeah, actually,
metal oxide semiconductor, MOSFET.
Ellsworth. Is that her name?
Jerry Ellsworth.
She was basically making transistors at home.
Yeah.
Like, had the baking system and everything set up on the counter. In the kitchen, or it was on her dining room table or whatever, but that was one of the things she pointed out, is that you had to have was the oxide buildup. So she was literally pointing while she was like superheating these silicon wafers, pointing a teapot that was boiling water into it so that it was blowing that water vapor across
so she got,
it and capturing the oxygen out of it.
So she got hydrogen and oxygen coming out though.
So either way, it's all the anomalies for every one of these experiments that I'm interested in. I couldn't care less about the laws of physics or the mathematics of the whole deal. I want to know that one time out of the 9 times out of 10 that you got the same result. I want to know why that one time it was different. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
you get discouraged looking for those things either. The results those either because. Most of the time, it's going to be some sort of error on the, you know, as they say in the computer world, the problem that creates that anomaly is going to be located somewhere between the keyboard and the chair. But that one out of 1,000 times that it's not, that it's a legitimate anomaly, that's where there's a secret that it hasn't been unlocked.
Well, they're with all these different free energy devices that you see out there. Now, granted, there are a whole lot of bogus ones out there, all right? But each and every one of them were built off of anomaly that occurred, such as, you know, we know that the way that bismuth works, you can actually get some magnetic levitation out of it. There's an anomaly going on there, all right? So with all these anomalies put together... This is what I want virtual labs for, is to bring all these minds together with all these different anomalies that we know of, you know, the lens effect and so on down the line, and use those which would normally be you wouldn't want them in a system. You see what I'm saying? Kind of like the heat that you get heat losses in an electric motor and stuff like that. Well, why aren't we figuring out a way to use that heat as opposed? Well, you look at a car motor. You know, if you didn't have a water jacket in that engine, then that motor would burn up in no time at all. But you take that water jacket and surrounding that motor, now you're transferring that heat off and actually using it to keep warm inside your car. You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, no engine's ever had a spout out for making a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
That actually wouldn't be a bad idea if you put something to generate power and charge up your car battery.
Yeah. So why not take some the thermal couples, the thermal piles, the Peltier elements, all these things there are known technologies. Why not incorporate all these technologies together instead of just completely wasting all that heat?
Actually, what's kind of funny is that when you take two dissimilar metals and push them up together, and you heat one side and not the other, you get an electrical generation. So there are probably a lot of a lot of feedback effect that's basically going to waste in the construction of the engine, because the engine is made of so many different little parts, and many of those have dissimilar qualities as far as the metals are made.
Yeah, like aluminum and steel.
The temperature gauges in there, they work on the same principle. You know, once your water gets up to a certain temperature, the little deal will tell you that your car is getting too hot or whatever, you know. Why couldn't you just expand on that instead of having one in there, have multiples in there, run in series to take that heat and run that heat into your battery? You know, any energy that you're putting back into the battery while you're going is less that you're wasting. You're storing it. You see what I mean?
Well, provided you're not topping off already. If your system is operating like it's supposed to, that battery will stay topped off.
Yeah, well, I understand that.
At that topped off point, then it's time to add another battery and start siphoning off that extra energy.
Well, like I said,
something else.
Like I said in my video, wasting free energy. You know, just leave the lights on. Hey, if it don't cost, you know, when's the last time you got a bill from the sun or a bill from the wind? You'll get a bill from the electric guy real quick, but, you know, I ain't never
Somebody pointed out the one argument toward, you know, the solid-state design that I have and putting LEDs on those to produce basically lights that you stick them to a ceiling or, you know, along a wall or whatever and just leave them on. And the idea of not having a switch was my original intent, but their argument is you're destroying the LED by doing that.
No,
so having the LED switch, right? But this gives you the opportunity. If you use it 8 hours a day, that means that you're looking at basically extending the life of that LED by threefold. So if it lasts 10 years, now it'll last 30 years.
Oh.
I mean, LEDs already have extremely high life. I mean,
and very cheap to manufacture.
As long as you treat them well.
Yeah.
Right.
If you don't overvoltage them.
Actually, there was a study talking about how, in a sense, LEDs create over unity by just a little bit because of the amount of light they put off and the code cathode, how it went up or whatever.
No, what they're doing is they're basically starting to steal the heat from the surrounding environment once they reach a certain level and they start putting off more photons than the electrons they take in.
Yeah, something along those lines.
Yeah,
I just glanced over a little article on it a while back.
NASA's
got a pretty intense study on that, so if you want more information on that. And it's a good starting point to figure out how to capture this waste energy that basically we're in the bottom of a well full of and start using it, you know.
Well, and there again, I keep talking about all the radio frequencies floating through the air. There's so many radio frequencies in the air that it's just mind-boggling. I mean, everything from the megahertz all the way up and down, you know. Why ain't we capturing that, you know? Every time somebody keys up on a CB radio.
The FCC gives you resistance on that because they say that it'll interfere with people's transmission that they paid money to be their frequencies to be, you know, to reach certain areas and stuff like that. They know that there's energy to be extracted from that, and they don't want anybody having access to that.
Actually, is there a limit in the radio energy you can put out in the air? I mean, a physical limit?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, because you're talking about thousands of different frequencies, and there's even frequencies coming from space, you know, where there's a star millions of light years away that's sitting in energy. There's a radio wave coming in from that, you know. And so...
pulsars.
Why ain't we tapping into it?
Their gravitational energy and the rotation actually puts out that constant frequency, the dimming and then the expansion of that power that keeps pulsing.
So once again, brings me back to my plasma technology. All I got to do to be able to hit all them ranges is to tap into that energy from wherever it's coming from via either different lengths of coil wires, picking up radio frequencies, and energizing that plasma, and then putting it all into basically one pond. It's kind of like a whole bunch of streams filling into one pond. You know, you got a larger bank that you can draw from now. You see what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
I think to do something like that and get useful power out of it, you're going to need multiple ponds stacked on top of each other, which with frequencies, you can do that. It's a frequency, the frequencies that you're talking about are kind of like fourth-dimensional water waves, so they can exist all in the same space.
Yeah, but they're all around us, so, you know, hey, stack them.
Rack
them and stack them.
Like, well, I'm coming at it in a standpoint of coming up with a solution to what you're talking about trying to do.
Yeah, I'm hip, but it can be done.
Multiple,
you know,
frequencies in some type of natural resonant harmonic, you know, create standing waves in those natural occurring resonance of nature, so to speak. I mean,
Well, we know that germanium's a really good, germanium has a good anomaly to it. It'll pick up some energy radio frequencies and stuff. As a matter of fact, that circuit that I was talking about earlier, I just found it.
Is that for the phone?
No, I want to, what I want to do is to get a voltmeter on this. Where's the good one?
That one.
All right. Anyway. Do-do-do.
Well, sure, I was going to say the germanium diode is a lot more, the difference between it and, say, a silicon diode is a lot like the difference you'd see between a block of marble sitting out there in the breeze and a leaf hanging off a tree sitting in the breeze. Obviously, the leaf is going to fluctuate whenever the wind blows, whereas the marble, you're not going to get any noticeable change. And that germanium diode is really, really delicate. So it's going to come back to, I don't think the material you're using as much as how refined a touch you can use when creating really minuscule amounts of the material to capture those frequencies. Because then you're relying on the atomic structure's ability to absorb or deflect or allow to pass through it the frequency that it's interacting with. When you get a big block of them, then it starts changing the frequency that it can react to. Two atoms thick, now it's double the frequency that it can only react to. Three layers, triple the size of frequency that it can only react to. Anything smaller, it doesn't notice. It just basically bounces off of it or is absorbed by it and gives nothing back.
Wow, radio silence. All right, well, I'm sitting here looking at something real quick. Somebody talk.
You've got some stuff going on there that you should maybe be looking into setting yourself a deposition tank together. You basically produce a high voltage and a strong magnetic field on one side of that tank that you've got your argon in, and whatever that material is that you're basically energizing will vaporize.
All right.
If that's over top of another area that it's dropping to, you can create a micro-thin layer of that material on something that's sitting in the other side of the tank.
All right, well...
Put both of them. Put yours back there again.
Anyway, what I got going on right here is I got that little circuit that I was talking about that picks up cell phones. And so while your cell phone's up and running, you get voltage. So where we went up to what? I don't know if yours is interacting with mine.
Who's
or
the poor
not.
Bastard you're pranking?
What, that's just my balance on my phone deal.
Oh, right.
All right, well, I'm up to, it went up to 0.70. Anyway, either way, this little circuit right here picks up your cell phone frequency. And there's a lot of videos out there. One specific guy in general, he lights up LEDs with cell phones. You know, it's radio frequency. You got energy going. And my buddy, Muddy Mudman, he used to hook a coil of wire up in his garage so that when his buddy got close and he was talking on the CB, he would know exactly when his buddy was in the yard. You know, because the difference of the how bright the LED got would tell him how close the guy was with his CB radio.
Right. That would have been a really useful thing for, there's a game where basically a bunch of people get together with a CB, with their CBs in their cars, and they all put some money together in a pot, and one person basically becomes the it, and they run off and hide in their car.
Where I come from, they call that triangulation.
They have to key up every so often to let them know where they're at. And if somebody finds them before the end of the night's over, they get the pot of money. If they don't, then the it gets to keep it.
Yeah.
So you could be using that LED constantly running to find that person.
Yeah, actually, right now, Muddy is working on some lightning experiments to hit a mirror with the lightning to see if it will create patterns on the glass.
Right. I'm seeing a contest now coming out of this to further develop your idea there, Shaziz.
Yeah, well,
something a little more physical and localized that you could probably pull in local brain power to try to, capture things and reach that goal that you're looking for without them even realizing it.
Yeah. If we got If we got a domino type, like what was that word you used earlier, diadem, for that circuit? Type. That circuit boy we was
cascade,
talking about.
Cascading
effect circuit, and we could get at the very least 9 volts, like amperage wise and everything, with a regular just a 9 volt battery. You'd be surprised how far I could take that. So if we were picking up enough radio frequencies out of the air, like maybe we had little micro antennas such as what you'd find in the little transistor radios, and you had different lengths of them all the way down the deal, so that you're not just picking up one frequency, you're picking up multiple frequencies and feeding that into a cascading transistor / capacitor bank. And every time those transistors kicked, they dumped into a larger capacitor bank, charging that capacitor up, and so on down the line. You see what I'm talking about? You initially would only be not getting enough usable voltage out of one, but if you cascaded them down, while one's charging, another one's discharging, and so on down the line until you actually have a capacitor that you can try this out. You can charge a capacitor up, hook an LED up to that, and that LED will stay lit for a while. You can use a capacitor just like a battery. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I know what you mean.
All right. So, with that said, tell me some more about your idea of this, this contest there, Thomas.
I just went AFK, I think. Just went AFK.
He left?
Yeah.
Be right
back.
Oh, all right. BRB, huh?
Yeah, BRB.
Yeah. Okay, away from keyboard.
All right, well, we're getting down close to the wire there, man.
An interesting experiment is to cool the bismuth and heat it up and see if its conductivity has gone up or down.
It should be.
It should.
I mean,
the thing we always run over time.
Yeah.
When you hit
which way goes which? When it heats up, it's more conductive, or when it cools down, it's more conductive.
You're talking about
that. I don't know.
Yeah, see, that'd be cool to explore and see.
Well, either way, you know, like I said, there's waste energy going on everywhere. You know, there's energy continuously through the air, and that's why I keep telling everybody: if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. Because we're surrounded in a sea of energy. You yourself put off energy. I mean, anybody can pick up a voltmeter.
Let me interject real quick. It's the energy that we put off that's actually denying that free energy exists.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So
the idea of free energy.
I was going to say, actually, I don't think it's so much the denial that free energy exists, but rather the anger that it exists because it's costing us energy just to fight it back because we're trying to control it with, you know, a sledgehammer. Like I said, it's like we're trying to do brain surgery with a sledgehammer.
We're trying to control it, right?
Right.
What do we put into it?
Well, we're trying to control it in a very clumsy manner.
Mm-hmm.
We really need to, it's the material sciences we're going to have to focus on in order to basically be able to create that scalpel that can exact what we want from it efficiently. So...
Yeah, well, there's.
I think what you're going to need to do for what you're talking about earlier is you're going to need different sizes of coils. So you might have to start looking at that deposition I was just talking about and etching to do stackable coils that are made out of, like, you know, 1, 2, 3 atom thick layers of metal.
Well, not just that. You don't actually have to have coils, believe it or not. If you take just a little piece of metal alone, like I got that aluminum pyramid hanging 40 feet up in the air. And it picks up energy out of the air, you know, and it's not a substantial amount of energy. And depending on the weather outside, it'll pick up, more. But just little different sizes of metal alone, you know, each one of those different sizes of metal will have some potential to pick up a frequency. You see where I'm coming from?
Right. Your size of your antenna thing, too, that comes, what I just mentioned, still comes back to that, too.
Yeah.
You can actually etch antennas onto, if you can deposit a metal onto a surface like the way they do with copper to make PCBs.
Yeah.
You could literally etch different sizes of antennas into that. And you're not even dealing with length so much then as you are the width as well.
Yeah.
So they can make different widths and lengths. To capture that energy, but if you're working with that argon chamber you're talking about to do that micro thin layer like you see on sunglasses, that you can see through.
Yeah.
And you and then you hit that with just a slight amount of, like, basically just coat it with something that's a wax or a paint base in the shape of all the different sizes of antennas you're wanting, and then hit it with something like perchloride to clear it all off, clean it all up, hook that up. Now you have a huge array of antennas that are on a flat plane, and
yeah.
you can do, like, say 10 of these and stack them on top of each other in series, like I was talking before about stacking frequencies, so that each frequency batch is controlled within that in that range, so that they're actually coupling together because of the distance between each layer.
Yeah, and you could insulate them in between so that you're not interfering one from the other, so they're still picking up the frequencies.
No, you don't want to do that. That's just it. You want the interference, but you want to adjust the size of each layer.
Oh, okay, I see where
you're
coming from.
Harmonic response. Yeah, they're actually
cascades through that layer to the conductive
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that would definitely be easy enough to prove. I mean, I could probably make a crude sample just using different types or different sizes of aluminum tape. You know, I could take strips
different
of aluminum. Different thicknesses and different widths and sizes of it, and then basically put it all down and solder them into a connector with some capacitors on there, and actually test the theory out. That's easy enough to do. What do you think?
Yeah, try it. It's experiment. Have you heard of MHD or magnetohydrodynamics?
Uh-uh.
It's like using, you know how it's based upon the theory of the right hand rule and anytime there's a voltage, the current is 90 degrees out of phase, right? And so if you take magnets and strong magnets, obviously you don't want a conductive material for your magnets, around your magnets, and then you put them 90 degrees to the voltage, and then you put almost like you guys were just talking about, anode, but only anode and cathode array, where the magnets are at, kind of alternating. When the plasma, the ionization happens through the chamber, the magnets create a current off of that direction of voltage, right? The ionization,
yeah,
and collect it into the anode and cathode. It's just a cold fusion type of theory, I guess.
I think they use that for rectifying current.
Yeah.
Well, we're running
hydrogen plasma rectifiers.
Yeah, like a vacuum tube rectifier.
We're running down to the wire now, and so with that said, we got a whole lot more. I hope you guys are able to join us on the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow, but you know, in the meantime, there's a whole lot to think about here today that we were discussing, that that gives me a whole lot more experiments to work with, and I'll try to put some videos out about it. But before we head up out of here, let's go around the table, and if anybody wants to say something quick, you know, let's do that. Who wants to go first? Anybody? Nope.
No one.
Jump at the all microphone right. At once. Might chip a tooth.
Too late.
He already chipped a tooth.
Yeah, got plenty of chipped teeth.
All right, anybody want to tell everybody their YouTube real quick so we can get up out of here?
Yeah, sure, I'll do it. Somebody's got to do it, right?
Yeah.
My name, which is Diadon, D-I-A-D-O-N, and just do a search on that, and you'll get plenty on YouTube for that. Guide its way, and I just like to say I love you guys. It's always fun talking, and keep it up. Let's vocalize on something in particular and really hammer it out.
My biggest push is to get virtual labs up and running, so while we're talking about this stuff, we can be doing it, you know.
Yeah,
right,
that'd be fun and interactive so people can see.
What about you, Thomas?
You can find me at Morph Trust, MORPHTRUST on YouTube. So I've got Borg Steam Factory, and it's Borg just like, you know, the Borg from Star Trek, steam like hot water, you know, released as a vapor, and then a factory where you manufacture things.
Cool.
The voxel blocks, or voxel block, sorry, don't put an S on the end of that. That's somebody else's site. voxelblock.com/page2html. number two, not spell out. We'll give you a rundown on what I'm working on for a localized facility. I will throw in there that if we could get multiples of these localized facilities together too, it would make it very easy to transmit products and goods and whatnot that are working or for these research projects we've got going on from one facility to the next, because we're going to have some flow through where people will be driving between you know one city and another to get from one place to the other, and they can carry a whole load of stuff without having to, you know, pay a bunch of postage fees.
Yeah, we're working on doing something like that here too as well, so that's a good idea.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. You get a constant back and forth between, say, there and here. All the tools and all the skills and resources at both locations now become one facility.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and that in Virtual Labs, we can air it. What about you, Ryan? You still there? You got any, you want to tell everybody your YouTube real quick?
Yeah, I'm here. I wanted to tell Binge up in Canada, thank you for sending me the Starship Coil. I can't wait to check it out.
That's the one that
everybody can check me out on Abrams Lab on YouTube. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
What about you, Mitko?
I've just been sitting here listening to you guys talk, and I've been here the whole time.
Is it great brain food?
That's part of it. Everybody needs to just, you know, listen sometimes. Even if you don't agree with it or you don't understand it, heck, you know, I've got some things to think about today, like everything.
Is it great brain food?
Gonna try to help us chiz this out with the the boat engine thing, tube thing. I'm trying to work on that. That may be something Thomas could have some good ideas on.
Cool.
Manufacturing that inside coil real cheaply and easily. I don't know.
To have the factory build that coil system for that pop-pop man size where a full-grown man can ride in it is $1,500 for one single deal. That's a 14-inch tall, 2-foot long, 12-turn coil with an inch and three-quarters pipe.
Yeah. Those are the specs?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think you could do that at a welding or at a damn muffler shop or something. You know, I mean, they could just turn that on with the bender.
All right, guys, we got to roll up out of here. Mitko, you got anything real quick? Because I got to get ready to podcast the show for Beverly's Hope Show, because she's out with the ladies today. So you got anything, Mitko?
Yeah, you can look me up in Facebook. It's Mitko Rumanov. And even in YouTube, you can check me out, Stalker Chorovich.
Cool.
And basically, that's it.
All right, well, everybody, thanks for listening to Mad Science. Stay tuned for the Hope Show, and definitely come over and join us in on the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow. And hopefully some of our information and our discussion today give you some ideas, some food for thought, some brain food, like I was trying to tell Ryan.
Hey, Shizzes?
Yeah.
When we're done here, just get together with me for a minute.
Okay, we'll do that. All right, well... Everybody, I'm going to play this tune up out of here, and then stay tuned for the Hope Show. Peace and love, everybody. Take care.
Whee! There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn, and nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street, singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Tracks deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going.